Hey, it's Scott MacArthur, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac. If you're hearing this, please follow the link in the show description to subscribe to our new feed for more great sports talk and interviews from Ashley Docking, Mike Zigomanis, and me.
Get an extra-large two-topping pizza for only $11.99. That's an extra-large two-topping pizza for only $11.99. So remember, get for only at Pizza Pizza.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
Do you mind not texting?
Sorry. Just finishing right now. Almost done. They're all finished right now. There.
Ziggy.
What in the devil's name is this?
Portobello mushrooms.
Where's the steak?
Oh, there's no steak. That's a healthier option. It's organically grown.
And Scotty Mack.
I'm paranoid about everything in my life. Even at home, on my stationary bike, I have a rearview mirror, which I'm not thrilled about.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Wednesday already, and we're opening up the text lines at 590-590 this morning. Let's get right to it. You can also tweet us at Scotty Mac Thinks, at SmartAsh, at Mike Zigomanis, at Fan590, and maybe 19 other accounts that I will not name here. Straight up, it's not a poll question, just a write-in. Describe the Leafs' play so far this season. We'll read some of the best responses over the course of the next 3 hours, because they did win last night, but I guess much to Mike Babcock's lack of chagrin, it was not a particularly eventful game. And he was quoted afterward as saying, well, a lot of people probably didn't like it, but I sure did. And I'm paraphrasing. I'll put my hand up and say that I was one of the ones.
Mike Babcock.
Who didn't particularly enjoy that.
Well, when you're coaching, you want the win, and they got it. And let's be clear about this. They haven't done well closing out games this year. So when you take that into consideration, what is it, 6 or 7 of 9, they've had the lead, they've been tied or have had the lead, and they've blown it of their losses this year. So that's a big issue when... Because when you're a team, you're going to be in close games all year. Look at the LA Kings. They haven't been this bad. If you look at their record, they're going to be in tight games all season. You lose these one-goal games, that's a problem for you. And this team last night found a way to win. Was it pretty? No, that was a boring game. A lot of players didn't show up for most of it. Nylander, Matthews, I can name you a bunch of guys that, I mean, CeCe played okay, not bad, but... Barry still kind of non-existent.
Lost.
Yeah. I mean, lost in a game. That's being considerate. So yeah, this team, that was just not what we want to see out of them. This is not the game you want, but at the end of the day, they did find a way to win.
A win is a win is a win. I understand that. And maybe this is the way you need to play in the playoffs, but the Los Angeles Kings, Ashley, strike me as a team that you can walk with the Leafs' speed and skill. I mean, this is a team in the middle of a rebuild. It has an aging core, whether that's Drew Doughty, Angie Kopitar, Dustin Brown, the like. I think you could make the argument that with where Jonathan Quick is at, if you look at his stats, the Leafs have the better of the two goaltenders in last night's game. I'm not saying you got to kick the crap out of this team 6-1 or 7-1, but I want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs play the Los Angeles Kings and be able to get out of that game saying, man, they skated circles around them. They outplayed them.
Having periods of dominance, having the defense and the goalie just absolutely under siege for the majority of the game. And I know that there were moments where the Leafs did turn it on and their big name stars and their offensive drivers did have opportunities. John Tavares, buddy, buddy, right in front of the net.
Channeling Patrick Stephan.
Wide open. He flicks it over the net. It actually reminded me of how we were making fun of, well, how I was making fun of the fact he's like, I have the mobility. I just don't have the power. And I'm like, yeah, well, maybe you had a point there, JT. Sorry about that. But there were moments where the Leafs could have pulled this away. And I'm sitting here wondering, this team is not what we thought they were going to be, at least not at this stage. I'm not saying there's not time for them to get it together and become this dominating force that we really truly think they can be based on their talent, really and truly what they should be based on how much they're paying their high-end talent. However, in these moments, when you're going through some stuff, when there's obviously growing pains, when there's obviously personnel coming in and out of the lineup, when wingers are moving around with different types of forwards again and again, a win like this is not the way you wanted it to be, but expectations are so high that at this point, I don't know what it is the Leafs could do to make every single person who's been a critic of them happy at this stage. Maybe this was the opportunity to do so. Maybe against the Flyers next game when they play Vegas first and they play the Flyers on Saturday, maybe that's going to be the opportunity to just have just kind of kick their butts, really, for lack of a better word. But there were some things that I did like about this game. But again, I know it's kind of just beating a drum on something that we know is not going to get solved with this team. But Jeff Carter absolutely lays out Kerfoot. And I'm not here vindicating for retribution, but at this point, it's like every single game someone gets their block knocked off and there's never a response ever. Yeah.
And that hit, he was okay with it. Kerfoot got interviewed the period later.
Because he'd scored.
Yeah.
And came back and scored.
I wasn't too thrilled with, I understand Kerfoot's a lot smaller than Carter, but there's still the elbow follow through. I watched it a couple times, but there was still head contact. Was there not?
Well, I'm going to have to go back and watch it again because I looked at it. Obviously saw it on the broadcast, saw the replay, looked at it again in the highlights afterward. I thought as hits go, like these open ice hits, which we see very few of in this day and age, that was about as traditionally clean an open ice hit as you'll see.
I didn't think the initial point of contact was the head. And I understand that when there are two forces moving together, you're going to be jarred and maybe that's what leads to some head contact. But I don't think that it was a head hunting expedition.
No, and Carter's not that kind of guy. And I don't even believe he's been suspended for anything
stuff on the ice.
But I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure on one of the next draws at center ice, he asked Kerfoot if he was okay. He said something to him like, hey man, are you all right with that? So that's when you know a guy wasn't coming after you. It's just the follow through, and I don't know if anything can be done about it, but it's like elbow
the
across.
Chicken wing?
Yeah, and if here's a good example of a guy that doesn't headhunt, and that's still the follow through. And when he goes to the room, I've been hit like that. I don't understand how guys come back into the game without feeling any effects.
But so just on the elbow follow through, I mean, is part of that momentum? I mean, that has to be what that is, because I didn't see any elbow contact.
Well, it's part of protecting yourself as well, because if you literally just drop your shoulder and then just go forward, I honestly feel like that can sometimes cause more damage if you're literally just lowering the boom on someone. I think the follow through is, I don't know, I feel like that's just part of the natural motion of an open ice check, even a check against the boards. But what I do know is that people are definitely ramping up their physicality against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And what we've seen now for three or four games is that there is no paying the quote unquote price. And I'm not talking in an old school mafia Tonya Harding way where I'm like meeting you in the change room.
Why?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being accountable on the ice, because no one on the Toronto Maple Leafs is going to, able to, or has the desire to hold the other teams accountable. So now the book's out on you. So the question is, what are you going to do about it? And you mentioned bringing back the stretch pass to lengthen the ice and make people pay for those open ice hits because the play is so spread out. So if you take yourself out of the play, hey, now we're going 4-4, no problem. You're not going to be able to recover to get into the mix. But the Leafs, they need to do something. And for me, it's literally as simple as a full 60-minute effort. Honestly, it's what you ask House League kids to do. Can I get an effort out of everybody that's going to be top shelf for 60 minutes from top to bottom. That's all I want. Well, and I still haven't seen it so far.
Well, for the most part, that game was soft in a lot of different areas. Not finishing checks, forechecking, letting LA skate through the middle, down low. Let's be clear about this. That LA Kings team, as close as they've been in a lot of these games so far, is not a strong team. And they have one of the worst power plays, if not the worst. They come out and score. When I saw that happen, what are you thinking? It's almost like, here we go again with the Leafs. And that's a bad state to be in when you're watching the game and when you're on the bench. I can tell you right now, when Tavares misses that first empty net goal, and then the game just goes along, and you're like, this is a like when you're watching the game, it's a boring game. I hate to say that, and I'm not saying I want to see an exciting. I'm not saying I'd rather see an exciting game and watch them lose, but the teams that are exciting to watch, Vegas, Washington, Boston, they're exciting to watch.
But that's because there's a physical element to their play. So it isn't necessarily that they're scoring five or six goals a night and finishing. It's that component can grind down on an opposing team over the course of three periods. With the Toronto Maple Leafs, if they're not whipping around, I mean, they're possessing the puck. I think the possession numbers last night, I follow someone on Twitter named Hardev Ladd. He posted the possession stats. The Leafs, based on the objective analytical data in last night's game, the Maple Leafs, you could argue, dominated. But is that what you saw? Maybe they're just skating circles with the puck. I mean, maybe this is Sergei Berezinauer, where it's just, here, look at me, my flow, I'm pretty, but I'm not doing anything with it most of the time. I just have it.
That's where I get confused, is with William Nylander and his analytics number on zone entries, on zone exits. It's at some point, you have to do something else. And you saw the game in Philadelphia on the play, and I watched a couple more times after the show, and yes, maybe that was a little worse than I originally thought. That effort can't be there on a night-by-night basis. He has to change the way he approaches these games, because playing like that the other night is not good. Did he play a little bit better against LA? I don't know. He was dumping the puck in, but to no one. How many times last night did the Leafs put the puck in? And
why do the Leafs play a dump and chase game?
Well, they're trying to change the way they're playing, right? So they're getting all the, you got to remember, this team right now is getting a lot of heat. They're feeling the pressure in the room, the coaches, from us.
But if you are a speed and skill team, why would you voluntarily give up the puck as you either approach or enter the offensive zone, especially if you are not an overly physical team that without someone like Zach Hyman and Andreas Johnsson, I'll give him his due, but if you don't have somebody like Zach Hyman who's going to go in there and win that puck battle in the corner with that defenseman, why would you voluntarily cough up the puck as you approach or enter the opposition's blue line?
Well, give the Kings, in a game like last night, give them some credit, because they definitely have a game plan last night to clog up the neutral zone. They most likely, that's probably the top thing on their list when they go into this game, is you cannot give them any space through the neutral zone, because that's where the Leafs will hurt you. That's how they win.
Well, Dermott had a really good opportunity.
Dermott was fantastic.
Based on that, he was really great. Well, we can get into that after about why he's not going to get a chance to play top 4 minutes when he's been great since he's been back, and really he's had a good body of work. But here's the overarching thing for me. I know we have a couple other things to get to in this opening segment here, but the Toronto Maple Leafs had a perfect opportunity to ingratiate themselves to fans and the city on the heels of the Toronto Raptors championship. And bear with me here. I know everyone wants to think that this is a blue and white city through and through. This is Toronto Maple Leafs town. But what happened with the Raptors and seeing the city and the GTA show out for that team, especially during the parade, 3.5 million people, the Toronto Maple Leafs had an opportunity to kind of ride that wave and get everyone just on their side, singing their praises. Let's go. There was a feel-good mood in the city. And we saw that Marner got locked up. We saw that their big names are under contract. And we look at the depth and skill of this team, and you're like, all right, let's go. And ever since then, it's just been, okay. I don't really know what I'm seeing most nights. I still don't really know what the identity is of this team. And honestly, if the Toronto Raptors keep playing well, I feel as though the shift is going to continue, that it's going to be more of a red and white city than a blue and white city.
Well, and that also is probably a generation or two away as it builds, just given that the demographics of Toronto are changing. Specifically, though, back to the hockey thing, and I feel the same way about baseball, and I think it's a comment we can make in general. With all of the online information that is available and the objective analytical data that all of these sports are now producing, and some are ahead of others, and you know, baseball is an individualized sport where you can more easily measure an individual player's contribution. Everybody takes that data and then applies it to a player's value. And when that player's salary is either actually or at the very least perceived to be out of whack with what the data shows he's producing, people's opinions on that individual change. Yeah. Mitch Marner, right now, people are saying, well, he's not worth $10.5, $11 million a year.
Well, your performance is always going to be...
So the perception changes.
Yeah, and it's always going to be related to what you make, and what you make is going to depend on... It used to depend on what you did. Now it's what you're going to do. So guys, used to have to win to get these contracts, and now they're just giving them to them. So that's an issue, because we've talked about Berkey, and we'll have him on later, and he says it the best. This money, it does change players. The expectation on players does matter. I've been on teams where guys get their contracts and you see their game change. And I think it has more to do with expectation than anything. Never mind that this guy's buying a $20 million home now and he's driving six more cars, or he has this much more money, or anything along those lines. This is a thing where expectation changes, and sometimes the pressure gets the guys. That's part of it. And then there's also a little bit of where guys just want more out of you. And when you're in the room and guys want more out of you, that becomes an issue at times. You get the pressure in the room.
Well, the other thing is because hockey has a hard salary cap, if you are paid an astronomical amount of money and you are not producing to that level, the team is restricted from pursuing alternatives that could help. Like the Maple Leafs right now would have to LTIR somebody of significance, and they didn't with John Tavares because he wasn't going to miss that much time. But in order to free up wiggle room to appropriately attempt to replace somebody. I mean, the Leafs are a capped team. Well, and so if Austin, Mitch, William, and John aren't doing their thing, absorbing half the cap, problems. Problems.
Once Hyman comes back, they will not be able to... I don't want to get into the details of the cap system and the CBA, but once Hyman comes back with this system that they have right now and the numbers and guys they have under contract, they will not be able to carry an extra player. That's a problem.
So here's the thing with that, though. I understand the money, and I understand being handcuffed in terms of being able to make a move. And if you're going to change anything with the Toronto Maple Leafs team down the line, it's got to be money in, money out. The numbers have to match. But the numbers always have to match in hockey because it is a cap. And I understand that some people have more wiggle room than others. But you can make that claim about if your top guys aren't performing, your team's in trouble, about any team in the league. It doesn't matter how much you make. The top talent needs to perform if you're going to be successful. And it might seem like the most layman's thing to say, but it's just the way that it is. The Leafs are built to withstand an injury, I think. John Tavares gets hurt. You still look at this lineup. You still look at how young some of the young guys are performing. And I still have high expectations for this group. I don't see Austin Matthews missing time, and I'm like, well, here we go. We're going to go 2-10 until he's back. I still have high expectations of this team, from Frederik Andersen to some of the younger defenders on this team and some of the new guys who still need to find their stride, to the forwards, to the fourth line, the third line, and the stars. There is no excuse at this point, I guess is what I'm saying. And just because you maybe want to make some moves or need to change it up in terms of a trade down the line, if your big guys aren't performing, that's not necessarily going to change anything, because who are you getting rid of? Say you get rid of William Nylander. He's the one everyone likes to talk about when you're talking about a tradable contract with a guy with skill that would be a desired asset. Who do you think you're getting back for him that's going to make that much of a difference? Maybe a defender. Okay, fine. I can agree with that. But if you're talking about more offensive firepower, who's a comparable? Who that someone's going to want to give up to? Because it's all fun and games to play GM, but you have to understand that if someone's in the pay bracket of William Nylander and has the skill or is perceived to be an equal contributor, why would that team necessarily want to get rid of him unless there's a problem? So there's just so many overarching things that you have to consider when you talk about this team. But at the end of the day, they have the talent to be very, very good. And so far, it's just been a little underwhelming, I'd say.
Well, when you talk about who to get rid of, we know now that they can't carry an extra player once Hyman comes back. Somebody will be moved of a significant salary. It's not going to be Tavares, it's not going to be Marner, and it's not going to be Matthews. So that only leaves you Nylander. And I'm not picking on him because of the way he's played this year or when he came back after he signed his contract. The fact that he's making that money and you're the sixth or seventh best player on your team, right? You've got the three, you've got Riley, you've got Anderson. And what do you put him at, number six on the team?
This year he's been better than Riley.
Well, and he's been better than Marner.
As value on your team, he's number six for me. Even Marner not playing up to his expectations, and Riley, there's a deeper issue there. He's injured, and he's playing through something. When you have that guy making that amount of money, he will get moved. And I just don't see any other option for the Leafs right now. So once Hyman's back, if Nylander's not shopped, I'm going to be really surprised. Somebody has to get moved on this team.
So you are telling us, in your opinion, that there is a blockbuster or the potential for a blockbuster with the Toronto Maple Leafs extremely soon.
Unless,
like this season.
Unless when Hyman comes back, unless there's some secret or they have some other plan that is I can't even think of.
Cooking the book.
There's
to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, there is no other option. I don't mind everyone. Is hard on Leafs management for, how could you give Matthews this? How could you give Nylander that? There's two different approaches you can take. One, you can play hardball with Nylander, the first guy up, and you do it with everyone else. That's one option. Or the second is you make everybody happy, you bring everybody in the organization, and that's what the Leafs organization has done. I'm not too sure on what is better. We're going to find out because I don't think any other team has done with the Leafs by just signing all their guys for pretty much whatever they want, as far as we know. So you have to see, this year will be we'll really know what they have and how an organization operates. And I don't think it's a crazy idea to sign all your guys, make them happy. Because like I said, this organization, not many guys wanted to come here and play. Now you get Tavares, now you get the young guys they want to sign long-term for a lot of money. Things have changed here. This team's a lot different than they have been in the last 5 years, and this will be interesting if they can't figure out what they're doing with this group or they can't figure out a way to get an extra player. I don't understand how you're going to just carry 20 guys on the roster. That just won't happen.
Text to 590-590. Describe how the Maple Leafs have played so far this season. We'll read some of the best responses. Ziggy just brought up a topic that we will bring up with Brian Burke at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Michael Grange on Nick Nurse's comments that Pascal Siakam with regard to the foul trouble, quote, has to be better. We'll speak to Michael Grange at 7:30. And Hugh Burrell drops in with the six pack next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Well, it sure wasn't pretty, but the Leafs will take it. Draw is won by Toronto. Dermott over on the far side for Justin Hall. A pass in. That deflects in front of the goal. They score! Matthews! Holy mackinaw, a scramble! And Matthews gets to it. And his 12th goal on home ice this year.
3-1 leaves the final. Actually, it was 11 on home ice. Willie Nylander, Alex Kerfoot also scoring. Freddie Anderson stopped 24 for the win. Post-game, the coach called this game beautiful. Agree or disagree?
I disagree with that, but insane.
But you know what he meant.
I do, but come on, guys. Like, when you look at this team and you look at the firepower they have, do you, when you're watching that, you can't be happy with, one, the effort, the intensity, what they did. Look at the goals that were scored by the Leafs. They weren't just Kerfoot picking a pass off, going in, and Nylander going in. They started with the back check from Kerfoot through the neutral zone, and Nylander's goal started when he actually back checked through by the opposing blue line. That's how they scored both goals. So, yeah, this one, I don't understand what Mike Babcock was talking about, but at the end of the day, you just have to win.
Well, I think he's a coach, so he likes these types of victories because his team had to work for it.
Well, and his team's not getting also throttled in the defensive zone where they're giving up four but scoring five to win. So, of course, he's going to like that. And quite frankly, when you talk about back-checking, that sounds beautiful to me, Ziggy, because it's not something we see every day from this Maple Leafs crew. But also, you guys, we know Mike Babcock is a contrarian. We know he's trolling in the media. Can we stop taking everything he says verbatim when you know that he doesn't really think it was beautiful? It was like, it was kind of cute. It was like a 6 out of 10.
He's great in the scrum. I'll give that to him.
Is there a Vegas player who's won a Stanley Cup with a different team that might be able to make a comment about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup?
I'm going to look over the roster graph.
Babs is texting him right now.
Yeah, that'd be
keep going with that, please.
That'd be Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yes.
In the first period last night, Kerfoot was on the wrong end of a huge hit.
Runstrom goes after the puck. Morgan Riley. Oh, that's a hard hit by Carter on to Alexander Kerfoot.
Carter looks over his shoulder. Riley's coming after him.
I have two questions for you guys. First of all, was it a clean hit, and should somebody have stepped up?
I don't want to say it was a dirty hit, but the elbow definitely followed through on him. Is that more the fact that Carter has a couple inches on Kerfoot? Most likely, but you did see Carter on the next draw they had, the next period, kind of ask and reach out, hey, are you okay? And Kerfoot, you saw what he said in his interview in between periods. He didn't think it was a dirty hit, but I mean, it's one of those things where he went down pretty hard. I've taken those hits. I don't want to say he was unconscious, but he was close to being out for the game.
All he did is come back and score a goal.
Yes, it was a clean hit. And because it was clean, I'm not sitting here with my back up that nobody jumped in. There's a place in the sport for clean contact.
Yeah.
And I don't think you always have to answer for that. But if you're slew-footing somebody, if you're hitting somebody from behind, if you're taking a 7-step run like Wilson did on Muzzin, you should have to answer for that.
Two.
Hey, somebody break up the Islanders.
Everybody on their feet. Bardreau, number 34 in blue, the right-handed shot. Picks it up at center. Drifts left over the Ottawa line. In alone, Cole Bardreau shoots and scores! First NHL goal is a penalty shot tally here at Barclays Center in Brooklyn that gives the Islanders a 2-1 lead.
Goal Bardreau, the seventh player to score his first NHL goal on a penalty shot, stood up as the winner. Islanders won 4-1 over the Senators. Longest winning streak since 1990. They've won 10 straight games. How much credit should Barry Trotz get for this?
He is a great coach. He's done it with every single team he's had. When he was in Nashville, he didn't have a great team. He had a similar lineup to this, maybe worse some years. And the guy just wins. And when I talk to buddies that play for him, they love him. He's a player's coach. He does the right things. He's good on the bench. And yeah, I'm not surprised when I see the season they had last year and this year.
Are they for real?
Well, that's the question, right? Semyon Varlamov, is he going to be able to carry them? He seems to be their number one right now. Who's their best defenseman? Is it Nick Leddy? Like, Hamonic's in Calgary now. This is This is a youngish team. They've got some firepower up front. Barzell's a really special player.
Yeah.
I think this will regress, but there is nothing cooler as a fan if a team like the Islanders, you love them, to go to the standings page and see under last 10, 10-0, W-10. Nothing better than that.
You know who else won 10 in a row last year, right? Buffalo Sabres.
You know what, Hugh? I don't understand why you have to rain on all these parades.
Sorry.
The thing that I like about the Islanders so far is that they're winning in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things that can't be understated enough. They're winning close games. They're blowing out teams. They're winning games against good teams. And they're handling business against inferior teams.
Three.
Habs did something last night that only one other team had been able to do so far this season. Beat the Bruins in regulation.
Max Domi holding on to it. Jeff Petrie creeps in, out in front, off a skate. Follow up, they score! Victor Mete! It comes early, and the Canadians are off and running.
5-4 Habs, the final. Victor Mete, 2 goals. He now has 3 in his past 9 after scoring exactly 0 in his first 126 games. Nice moment early in this one. The standing ovation for Zdeno Chara, who's playing his 1,500th NHL game. And coming from the Canadiens fans who watched Zdeno Chara almost kill Max Pacioretty a few years back, that was kind of special.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was incredible, the fact that some fans will cheer for a guy in another team. There's not many cities, though, that understand the game as well as Montreal. So you are kind of surprised to see an opposing team do that. But at the same time, the Montreal fans, they're knowledgeable. They know what goes on. But yeah, that hit was brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Pacioretty's still hurting from that one. He's still hit. Yeah.
4.
ESPN has conducted an NHL player poll with a wide-ranging series of questions. 50 players across the league were questioned. Which team has the worst visiting locker rooms? Washington. Also the worst media food, by the way. What road city do you dread the most? This is not a surprise. Winnipeg was the winner, followed by Buffalo. 58% of players asked said the NHL does not have a cocaine problem. But 10% of players said, yeah, it does. And perhaps the most important question of all, do you have gritty fatigue? 72% said no. 28% just wish gritty would go away. Why doesn't anybody want to go to Winnipeg or play in Winnipeg or visit Winnipeg?
Winnipeg is cold and Edmonton is right there with it. You can't walk. You can't leave your hotel room. I think you can get to the rink through like the buildings and all the crosswalks that go over all the, I don't know, what do you call those things? You know, Winnipeg has them.
Yeah, the elevated.
Whatever.
An overpass? Yeah.
What?
They have them in Minneapolis,
hallway.
Too.
A bridge?
Ziggy, when you were playing, what was the worst visiting locker room?
Pittsburgh was the worst. I know they have a new arena right now, but that old Igloo Mellon Arena,
Civic Arena
was the, I think they had a rat problem in the rink. A couple of the trainers had had a couple sightings, but that setup was the worst. But the rink, actually, when you actually got on the ice, I used to love playing in Pittsburgh as a visitor.
We're just going to bury the lead about the cocaine.
Yeah, 10%.
Guess we're not going to talk about that.
I was going to get to that. 10% of players say, yes, there is a cocaine problem in the NHL.
Cocaine and hookers, my friend.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a good Tuesday night, yeah. You?
32% of players said they don't know. So
right.
So up to 42% either don't know.
Which is like half.
Yeah.
It's essentially half. Here's the thing, though. So obviously it's very difficult, even under the cloak of darkness, to get a player to talk negatively about people in their league, their teammates, or a problem as serious as drugs. But additionally, problem is super subjective. So what I think could be a cocaine problem, Hugh, you might not think, Scott might disagree, Mike might agree, right? Everyone has a different philosophy when it comes to recreational drug use. And I think that this is interesting that 2 articles revolving NHL players and their drug use came out on the same day. I don't think this is the end of this. This is something that's definitely going to have legs.
I'd be more concerned about the painkillers that guys are taking, whether it's from injuries or surgery, or guys are dealing with head and concussion issues, because I have seen that with guys I've played with, and that would be an issue I think the league needs to take on before anything.
Yeah, they can't. That's a really good point. Yeah, they can't keep their head in the sand about any kind of drug use in the NHL.
Five.
Raptors take on the Sacramento Kings tonight. Raptors should be okay in this one if they can stay out of foul trouble. More specifically, if Pascal Siakam can stay out of foul trouble. Siakam is third in the league with 4.5 fouls a game. In 6 games so far, Siakam's fouled out twice. He's reached 5 fouls twice. Why, Coach Nick Nurse? Why?
He hasn't been very smart, if you want me to be honest with you. Most of those have been fouls, and they're touch fouls that they're not calling on everybody, and they're not calling every trip up and down. But if you go back and by the letter of the law, you say, hey, he's got 2 hands on him. So he's got to take the 2 hands off him. And that's what we're working on. Just we're pouring over the film. We're showing him, you know, just a little bit. And that's okay. I mean, it's something he can change quickly.
Ashley, is this a mechanism of Pascal Siakam kind of being the focus of this team now? The other team is going right at him? Or is this just a bad habit that he's got to get out of?
I don't know where it came from because he wasn't picking up these little ticky-tacky fouls last season. So, yes, maybe on the offensive end, which leads to turnovers, which is something the Raptors have been pretty high in their numbers. Yes, maybe there is an element of him feeling the added pressure to score and not just be efficient but be a little bit more volume-based. In terms of the defensive end, Pascal Siakam was given difficult defensive assignments last year as well. So I think it just is going to be something he needs to be mindful of. Obviously, the coaching staff has talked to him about it.
More attention paid to him this year, for sure.
A little bit, yeah. But on defense, it's just still the one-on-one stuff, right? So Nick Nurse directly challenged him to the media. He's definitely spoken to him behind closed doors as well. So we'll see how Pascal responds. Everything that we've seen from this kid has given us an indication that he's going to respond well.
When you take a lot of penalties in a game or fouls, usually it's because you're lazy or out of position, and it's one or the other. In situations with Siakam, I don't know, like Ash said, it might be the fact that there's a little bit more, the spotlight's on him a little bit more, but let's be honest, when you're taking stuff, fouls and penalties, you need to put yourself in better positions on the quarter ice.
I guess the danger, though, real quick, is you don't want him playing too conservatively. You don't want him to be afraid to engage.
I don't think he's capable of playing conservatively, which is one of the reasons that we love him.
But you hope that this doesn't make him do that.
No, but also just trust your teammates. Yeah. Trust your teammates to be in the proper position if you get beat that there's help side coming.
6.
Carolina Panthers have sent quarterback Cam Newton to the IR with that injured foot, meaning that his season is over. ESPN's Jorge Sedano says this could be it.
Look at his contract. It's $19 million next year, all non-guaranteed. He's $21 million against the cap. They can actually cut him, unfortunately, for his sake, very easily and just move on and try to start over. Look, I think in the short term, this takes some pressure off of him because there's not the constant questions to Cam, to Ron Rivera, to his teammates about whether he's going to come back and play or not.
So he's 32.
Is he already?
Yeah, he's got a terrible foot injury that just will not heal. And people are saying he's already got a dead arm. Have we seen the last of Cam Newton?
Well, I think we've definitely seen the last of Cam Newton in Carolina.
Oh, yeah, he's done there.
But somebody of his talent, if he wants to keep playing, is going to get an opportunity. You just keep coming back to the truth of the matter, which is that there are 32 NFL teams, and there are not 32 starting capable quarterbacks. Each team has a starting quarterback, but each team does not have somebody who can help take them to the promised land, even the playoffs.
But this isn't Cam Newton from 6, 7, 8 years ago.
No, it's not, but there's a lot to be said for some time off. And I know that it means your skills might not be as sharp or you might not be as astute or your body might ache a little bit more after a tough practice. But you see Rob Gronkowski raving about what this time off has done for him, for his mental, for his physical. He's finally been able to recover from injuries that have plagued him for years and years and years.
Well, that and the CBD.
That and the CBD. But Cam Newton gets some time off. He gets right. I think he can definitely help someone. And to Scott's point, there are a number of quarterbacks in the NFL that have been taken out of their starting roles, performance-based alone.
Yeah.
There's chance for some shuffle.
Speaking of that, Nick Foles is now back as starter in Jacksonville. The Gardner Minshew era is over. Foles, of course, broke the collarbone in the first half of week number one. He's back in as the starter there.
Hugh, thank you.
Huh. Oh, you're welcome.
You, decent job at best, honestly. So proud.
You know what? Yeah. Mediocre. I mean, you, like Mike Babcock, you guys may have thought this was ugly.
But I thought it was.
I thought it was beautiful.
I thought it was beautiful. It's take your kid to work day, and there's a Dark Side of the Mon story. Our technical producer, Ryan Mon, has a story to share. And if Ashley Docking were put in charge of your kid, would you trust her? Yeah, we'll talk about that next.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Time for Dark Side of the Mon.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Okay, Ryan Mon is our extremely talented technical producer. All of the audio components you hear on this show, top of the hour, splices and stuff, he puts them together. He's also a little bit crazy, but in a good way. And today is Take Your Kid to Work Day, or Take a Kid to Work Day. Ninth graders across the city aren't in class. They're hanging out with people who have jobs to see what the working world be like. And Ryan Mon, I'm setting you up for the full story. Fire away. There's a Dark Side of the Mon to this.
Listen, Take Your Kid to Work Day. It's a great day if your parents have a cool job. My dad was a principal. So I ended up spending the day the exact same way I would at school, in a classroom.
No, in a principal's office.
No, he put me in a classroom.
So not like your regular days at school.
My father being principal doesn't really make me the most popular kid in school, especially when there's a student in that class that your father suspended on multiple occasions, finds out who I am, threatens to kick my ass, and this guy totally could. He terrified me. So I spent the afternoon in the principal's office just stapling papers together for the rest of the afternoon.
So you could hide?
So I could hide.
Oh.
This kid could have taken me out. No problem. And we're talking like, this is like a grade 7 class. My dad was like grade school.
What you should have done is gone double agent. You should have pretended like, hey, I know where my dad keeps his office keys to this kid if you want to, you know, start some trouble, get into some ruckus. Then go back and tell your dad, hey, I set this trap for you to suspend this sucker again.
Anything he confiscated, I know exactly where it is.
Exactly.
But, Mon, you got all the rings on your fingers. I mean, that's like, if you were wearing those at 12, those are like brass knucks.
That's right. I'll try to take you out.
Bit of a sucker punch there. You could have just dropped him with one hook.
Which we are not encouraging.
No.
We don't enjoy sucker punches here. That's not nice.
And not only that, how boring was my report the next day?
Right, that's
like,
true.
Like, the kids really want to hear about that, me sitting in class like you guys are right now. So here's hoping that you're having more fun wherever those kids are going in grade 9 today.
Ashley, I think, like, why wouldn't a friend of yours have said, hey, come watch Ashley work at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. She'll take care of you. We're getting pizza later this morning. I mean, it would have been a day.
I'm on the hook for a tour here. One of my friends who works in the building, she could not get her kid into the Sportsnet tour that's going on. I guess there's just too many kids at this point. And so she asked me to, you know, take her son around and just show him the ropes kind of thing. So that was why I asked, like, would you guys be comfortable with me babysitting your nieces and nephews? Because I feel like I get a bad reputation, but I'm definitely fun aunt. Like, they would have a great time. Their report would be way better than Mon's.
You're fun aunt?
I'm definitely fun aunt.
I don't know if I'd... Did you just... Kawhi there? Oh, fun guy.
Yeah. I am a fun aunt.
Wow. You know, the old joke, you got to get up early to pick up on that humor. I got up at 4 o'clock this morning, and it took me, like, a couple extra seconds.
Yeah, I would trust Ash with my nephews.
That's
for
nice.
Sure. Why not?
Well, no, the thing is that if she's truly fun aunt, then I'm taking a back seat as fun uncle.
Oh,
you're probably cooler
jealous.
Than me. So now it's the jealous game.
My nephews would love to come in and see what they always ask what goes on I don't think they listen too much now to the morning show because they're not up before 8 o'clock, but they're on their way to school. But I know they do listen in the car, and they would, I mean, they'd love to come and check it out here with all of us.
Bring them in. Show them the responsibility of being an adult and having to get up really early in the morning to go to work. If you want to make the bucks, the buck.
Single dollar, please.
You want to make 50 cents
on the dollar.
This is what you've got to do. Michael Grange at 7:30 on Nick Nurse's comments about Pascal Siakam's foul trouble. The Maple Leafs and the Kings last night. Zdeno Chara played game number 1,500, and he was the subject of a piece discussing why he doesn't haze first-year players. And does the NHL, and why limit it to the NHL, do pro sports have a drug problem? We'll get into all of that next.
Get an extra-large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra-large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get... Wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
I just figured I might as well get paid for being here.
Ziggy.
All you ever talk about is being a pro hockey player.
And Scotty Mack.
He's absolutely the most sincere, genuine, straightforward person you'll ever want to meet. A real honest guy.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Michael Grange later in the hour, and we'll play a little clean sweep as well to get you into the draw to win a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host the Flyers, conclude the homestand on Saturday night. Threw it out there on Twitter, at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Smart Ash, at Mike Zigamanis. We also want your texts to 590-590. Describe the Leafs' play so far this season. And I have since tweeted, and it's been retweeted by the Sportsnet 590 The Fan Twitter account. This is kind of a paraphrase. Mike Zigamanis on leadoff in the last hour. The Leafs cap situation is so restrictive when Zach Hyman returns from injury. Quote, and this is Ziggy, I wouldn't be surprised if a big contract is traded.
They don't have enough space to carry extra bodies. And like you said during the commercial break, does that matter? If the team has their farm team in the same city.
Yeah, this is not St. John's, Newfoundland anymore. The Leafs
and that does,
used to have their AHL team there. This is Coca-Cola Coliseum exhibition grounds 10 minutes from Scotiabank Arena.
That does make a difference, but you're going to want guys around the team. It matters just being at practice every day. If you're a guy that's not in the lineup and then all of a sudden you're practicing or you're playing with the Marlies when you're not playing, it's okay if you're a young guy. It's okay if you're a guy like Nick Petan where he wasn't playing, and then, all right, let's go to the Marlies, play a couple games, get your game back, and come back. But if you're a guy that maybe they don't know who's in the lineup every night, this might be the team this year where they might not have the same 12 guys all year. Will that be an issue? Absolutely. But there are certain teams, organizations that just don't play the same. They don't have the same lineup every night, and they need to rotate players in. And that's a luxury that some teams don't have, and some teams just have to play the guys. And that might be the situation here with the salary cap. They might have to just play the same guys every night when an issue comes up or a guy doesn't play well. Then they go to the Marlies. But he hasn't been with the team. Things change. Systems change. You don't have a pulse of the team. There's a lot of issues with having that setup of not having extra players around, extra bodies around the team.
So there are different levels of significance when you talk about these contracts. I mean, obviously, John Tavares isn't going anywhere. Auston Matthews isn't going anywhere. I can't imagine Mitch Marner is going anywhere. Are we talking like William Nylander, or are you talking somebody on that lower tier who's making $3, $4, maybe $5 million, like with Travis Dermott coming back, Cody Ceci? Does he become expendable? Do you go with Dermott into your top four and then a Marinson Hall, name another player or two hybrid depending on performance, and CeCe's pushed out the door in this hypothetical scenario?
Which team is going to take a guy like CeCe, though?
That's pre-U.S. Thanksgiving. What the hell do we know yet?
Yeah, I can't see anybody even taking him. Or who's going to trade? Like, what are they going to get back for him?
Well, that's not the win at that point, though. If the point is to literally shed cap and open up room, then it could be a scenario where you cut your losses. And you're like, okay, if CeCe, and I hate to throw him under the bus in this fake conversation about what could happen, but if CeCe is the one to get moved because his $4 million or whatever it is he's making is what the Leafs want for some wiggle room, then you expect not to get something back in the sense of a defender who you expect to play top 4 minutes. But that might be okay because you have someone like Travis Dermott who has shown that he's at least deserving of a chance to take those top 4 minutes. And really and truly, it's not going to really be worse than what CeCe has shown us with Morgan Rielly. But maybe the answer is just it's not a Morgan Rielly pairing, that the chemistry isn't there. So even a shuffle on the defensive end would make it more beneficial for CeCe, boost up that stock, then you trade him. But, you know, there are so many variables of what could happen here with this Leafs team, which kind of makes them interesting because at the beginning of the season, we thought, at least I did, I was like, there's a strong possibility that they walk through most opponents. They have a few tough matchups against the Lightning, who are trying to redeem themselves after the way they exited last year. And then they have the Bruins, the monkey that they just can't seem to get off their back. But really and truly, things should be pretty smooth sailing. And look at us. We've been in turmoil, seemingly, from the beginning of the season. You'd think that they had two wins to their name, the way that people are talking about this team. But again, it all falls back to expectations.
And expectations are something that are real, and you expect certain things from certain players. And if you want to talk about this D core, Barry is at the top of the list. So as much as we want to say, well, CeCe's not doing what he wanted, well, then what happens? Barry goes up into the top spot. He hasn't done what they expected. Then all of a sudden, Hall is in your top four. They weren't even talking about him making the team this year. And then all of a sudden, Marinson comes in, and he's one of your top six. And then what? What kind of depth do you have on defense?
Drew Doughty offered a follow-up yesterday to his comments from 2 days ago.
So happy.
Where he, I mean, and I'll paraphrase here, suggested that he might have to change tact on how he approaches dealing with the media when he cycles through Canada.
Exactly. And this goes back to when you get burned by the media.
He
didn't get burned.
He got his words twisted in Vancouver.
Come on.
Not here.
Vancouver. His words got twisted. And this is the issue with the media. If you're going to twist the guy's words, now he's not going to talk anymore. I've had that happen. I've brought it up twice in the show. I didn't get my words twisted. I had a journalist make up words and put it in his article. So once that happens, you're going to lose a player. You're not going to get him anymore. He's not going to be available to you in general. And then a guy like Doughty, why would you say anything anymore?
Well, Doughty, for context, was asked a couple of days ago, Kings practice day here in Toronto, about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. And the follow-up question was a hypothetical. Is it inevitable that this Leafs roster is capable of playing like a team that can win a Stanley Cup? And he said, look, well, it's not inevitable. There's really no inevitabilities. And when you look at the standings in the Eastern Conference, clearly they're not the best team right now. Well, we talked about that a lot on the show yesterday. It was written about. Here's Doughty speaking yesterday post-fallout.
You know, if any team wants to be successful in the playoffs, they need their top scorers playing good defense, and they need their best defenders chipping in on the offense. That's the only way you're going to win. So you need all-around hockey from everyone. What do you mean inevitable? That they can do that?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't say that. I know they have a really good roster, but I mean, a lot of teams have good rosters in this league, and I don't think they're in first place in the East, are they? So that means right now there's some better teams than them, just judging off the standings.
Okay, so that's the Doughty comment from 2 days ago. Yesterday, he followed up and said, look, if my words are going to get twisted, I'm going to have to change tact here. I've always been open, but I'm going to have to change tact. if my words are going to be taken out of context.
And what he was talking about in terms of the Vancouver quote-unquote misquote, which members of the Vancouver media took offense to, because like we saw with Stephanie Apstein, when your credibility is called into question, just like an athlete, if someone's challenging you, your effectiveness, the role that you play with your team, the similar kind of defense is going to be put up if you're a reporter and a player is accusing you of twisting words. And the comments that Doughty made in Vancouver that took people by storm was, a team like that. He was referring to getting drubbed at the hands of the Vancouver Canucks 8-2. And the quote goes, and this is the paraphrase that was used, a team like that should not be beating us. So there's a full transcription of the quote and what he says. It's embarrassing. A team like that should not be beating a team like ours 8-2. There's actually no way. I know they had a lot of energy right off the bat because it's their home opener and they had their whole ordeal with captain and whatever, but we had a chance to come back. And then we just gave up a goal right after we scored a goal. It was a bad team effort by everyone on this team, I thought. So that's the full quote. But the words aren't twisted. He did say we can't be getting beat by a team like that. And what that means to me is that you don't see the Vancouver Canucks as an upper echelon team. And based on what you, the Kings, have achieved, or basically what you think you have in your locker room, means that a better effort needs to be put on the ice. I don't think those comments are very damning. I think it speaks to him having confidence in his group. And I think it speaks to him saying they had a terrible performance. Obviously, if you're a Vancouver fan, you're going to take a team like that as something that's personal. But it's what he said, and it's what he meant. The problem is that people assume the worst when someone says something, even if it's true. And I know that's kind of a bit of a convoluted way to say it, but if I say, yeah, you know what, I'm not really a fan of someone's music, it doesn't mean I think they're a terrible musician. It doesn't necessarily mean I think that they're not talented. I just mean it's not for me. So when people hear quotes like that, a team like that, or when they're talking about what a team has to do to win a Stanley Cup and people are considering it a shot towards the Toronto Maple Leafs, let's see if there's some truth in things that he's saying. And not, and it doesn't matter. He said them. Like, if you don't want to be quoted, then be more clear on what you mean.
Well, I think with Doughty too, he's a guy you'd approach. Look, the Ovechkin thing opened up this line of questioning. And Drew Doughty was approached for a couple of reasons. Comes to Canada, or comes to Eastern Canada, only once, right? The Kings only come to the Eastern Conference opponents once. So this is your chance to get him in Toronto. And you know he's outspoken. We said this yesterday. Who's going to Anže Kopitar? You're not going to get anything out of Kopitar, but you might get something out of Doughty. And you ask that line of questioning, and it feeds a narrative. And Doughty could very well, living out in Los Angeles, be ignorant to this track, but it is feeding a narrative here in Toronto of our doubt about this hockey team. And so you can pluck the quote and put it in and say, here's what I've been seeing. Oh, and here's what a two-time Stanley Cup champion, Norris Trophy caliber defenseman in his prime, has to say about what it takes and what a team needs to do to win a Stanley Cup. And I'm not seeing that with the Maple Leafs.
But why not ask Jake Muzzin? He won a cup with Doughty.
Because Jake Muzzin's not Doughty.
He's not Drew Doughty, but he also wasn't around for a few days.
My whole counter argument is just, you have a guy in the room who's been on the team. So if you want to make the point where, well, we had a Stanley Cup champion talk about what he thinks of this team, has anyone asked Jake Muzzin about what this team needs
to do? Come on. Let's be real for a second. No disrespect to Jake Muzzin, whose voice has more credence in this conversation to a Toronto market, to a Canadian market? It's going to be Drew Doughty. I'm sorry, and that's no disrespect to Jake Muzzin. People did ask Jake Muzzin about playing with Drew Doughty, and his take was, I learned so much from him. I really enjoyed playing alongside him. What we did together was fantastic, but Drew Doughty's voice just lends more credence. He's had a better career.
And I'm not willing to victimize Doughty in this situation. I mean, he is responsible for what he says and for his words, and he is smart enough to know, and he is media savvy enough to know. Especially when he's in Canada. Goodness, I mean, grew up in the area, not far from here. He knows when he speaks, He sees the mic flash, SN, a blue and a red underline. If that's in front of his face, he knows that's going to get significant play. That's going to get put out there on Twitter. That's going to get put together in a one-minute Instagram video of his best cuts from that day's scrum. Like, he knows that. These guys are savvy enough, and it's explained to them in advance if they're not.
But sometimes when you do say something, like his words in Vancouver, and I haven't seen the actual interview. I don't know if he was that on camera? Was that in print? Because sometimes you can say things, and when they get printed, you can take what a player says, and you can move it around and say whatever you want. You can make your article about it.
I read you the full transcribed
quote. At this point, this is not like 20 years ago where you'd have a scribe who would just be writing chicken scratch, doctor-style shorthanding. You've got almost everybody. That sounded good. You've got almost everybody with a recording device, right? So the quotes are there.
So here's what I will say. I will agree with you that sometimes things are brought to the edge of the context to fulfill a narrative. I will say that I've seen that sometimes, and that's a fair point. And so I understand why athletes would be upset if you're like, come on, man, you know that's not what I meant. Because context is king over anything. You can make a soundbite sound as salacious or as innocent as you want based on context. So what I do appreciate, and I always ask this when I hear a quote that might be controversial, what was the question that was asked? Because that's important. What are they answering to? Were they badgered and led into answering something? That's important. But also, I do appeal to fans to not just take headlines as is, because the actual writer doesn't write the headline. Someone else within any organization is tasked with writing the headline, an editor usually. So they'll take something that could be seen as clickbaity or salacious, and they'll put that in the headline. And they'll be like, Drew Doughty said the Canucks ain't you know what. And you're like, whoa. And then you run with that. People don't actually go and read the body of the article. And when you actually take the time to read what was written, 99.9% of the time, it's not as bad as the headline suggests. So those are two things that I will say if I'm advocating for players who speak their mind and they talk a lot. Context is king. And please, fans, read the article, because the headlines are not indicative of the full story. And oftentimes, they don't even come close.
Also, click on the vid. If it's a video,
yeah,
you know, because I did not, and I saw some interpretations out there that Doughty had ripped the Maple Leafs. That wasn't what I got. I mean, the first thing I thought, and we have a WhatsApp chat that we communicate in all day as we prepare for the next day's show. And I think the first thing I said was like, and this is a little heavy. I mean, we're all in the same industry. I understand the angle sometimes. It feels like as the media, we're now going to players in an attempt almost to troll the local team, right? But again, nobody debates the skill of some of the individual players on this Toronto Maple Leafs team. But there are questions about whether these highly skilled athletes as individuals can put it together as a group to attain and achieve the ultimate prize. And so we're going to other guys who have achieved that prize to ask them what it takes, and then we write around those quotes.
And it's fine to ask players that questions about when you're playing a team. It's getting to the point now where if this happens again, it's a too much. When you're asking if the next team, if Vegas comes in, they go to Fleury, why can't the Leafs win?
But Fleury's a different personality too. He might handle it differently.
It's just, you can ask one guy, I don't know, now we're asking Doughty, now we're going to ask another guy in Vegas. It's just, at what point is it like, okay, enough's enough?
But what's the difference between that and handing a microphone into a player's face and be like, talk to me about your defense in that period. Talk to me about your offense in that period. To a certain extent, scrums, game day scrums, practice scrums are largely repetitive, right? There's only so many things that you can ask in a public setting, in a public forum, that are going to give you an answer. And I think that you can do it creatively. And I think that there are certain nuanced questions that can be asked. And those answers and those questions do get a lot of run when they're presented to the athletes. But I would just say that what's the difference between a question like that, where it's like, hey, talk to me about what you see with this Leafs team and what it's missing, versus talk to me about your offensive performance has been lacking.
Well, the other thing too is you could write a column without any on the record quotes, and then somebody would throw it back in your face saying, well, you never played the game. What do you know? Right.
And so, and that's the easiest argument to, that's the easiest thing to say in those situations. And I don't agree with that either. You know what I mean? Like I don't like that take at all.
But I agree with you 100% on that point. But what I'm saying is there are different ways to handle this situation, and each and every one of those ways can be picked apart.
With the Doughty comments in Vancouver, though, when he says we just can't, what was it? We can't lose to a team like that. Or that weight, like one word.
No, he said,
could change everything.
This is the direct transcribed quote. I mean, I ain't going to park it. It's just embarrassing. I mean, a team like that should not be beating a team like ours 8-2. A team like that.
And that's not, it's not that bad what he said. They lost 8-2.
1,000%.
He could have said that about every single team in the league. You could beat 8-2, like, as bad as they are, I don't think any team should be losing. At the end of the day, it's the NHL. If you don't show up to play, you can get beat by 10 goals. And that's just a fact. So the way he said that, I'm not thrilled, but it's not as bad. And then you have to read the whole article. I mean, what does the journalist do with that quote? Do they just go and attack and, oh, Doughty thinks the Vancouver Canucks are awful? That's when a player gets not upset, but he's talking more about his team. Obviously, he says they shouldn't get beat by the Vancouver Canucks.
But then the spin is the Vancouver Canucks have been really good so far this season. So I get you want to have confidence in what your group can do, and every player should. Absolutely, you should have confidence in your group, even when you're going through struggles and growing pains. But it just seems to be without context on his part in this case.
Brian Burke will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into Doughty's comments. I think we talked with Berkey about Ovechkin's comments, and get Berkey's thoughts on Mike Zygmunis's take that the Leafs might have to move a significant contract here very soon when Zach Hyman comes back. Nick Nurse, critical of Pascal Siakam and his lack of discipline on the foul front. We'll detail that with Michael Grange. He joins us next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, like I said yesterday, it's Kings Week in Toronto. L.A. was here to play the Leafs. It's Sacramento in town tonight, a game you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, starting at 7:30, a game you can also watch on Sportsnet 1. And our good friend, Sportsnet's NBA insider and analyst, Michael Grange, is with us to, if I'm putting this on a pecking order, probably thirdly or fourthly tee up the game. We've got a lot more to get to, including Nick Nurse's comments yesterday about Pascal Siakam and his foul trouble. I mean, Michael, you were there. We just did an entire segment on Drew Doughty and comments potentially being taken out of context. So I feel like I'm going to start our chat by being responsible. You were there. You heard Nick Nurse's words. You heard his tone of voice. You observed his body language. What do you deduce from what Nick feels about what Pascal needs to do or to change here?
Well, I think he needs, I think you can take it literally in that he really needs to be more careful, smarter. I think was what Nick was saying about how he's using his fouls and how he's positioning himself and sort of putting himself in position to take some questionable calls. But I think all it was the coach speaking frankly, like, and it's nothing that Siakam hasn't said to us. Like, he's said it almost after every single game. It's like, I need to be smarter. I need to be this. And, you know, and I think I can promise you that that's the conversation Nick Nurse has had with Pascal Siakam as well. So I don't think it's him calling anyone out or, you know, but when you see the kind of the quick headline or the quick tweet, you know, I can't exactly remember what it was, you know, being dumb, I think is the word that's got a lot of people's attention. Like out of context, it seems a little harsher than it was in person.
And just to kind of, Kurt, like to go on the heels of the conversation that we were having, how difficult is it sometimes, Grange, to appropriately contextualize comments that you get from, say, a Nick Nurse, say a Pascal Siakam, say a Fred VanVleet, players and coaches who are very frank in what they're saying, but also don't mean it in a defamatory way, to make sure that you get the point across, which does matter based on the personality of the person that you're talking to as well?
It can be a little bit of a challenge, only because we're just so used to everything, all language being couched and measured, and nobody actually says exactly what they mean. And so when someone does, people get all excited. Yeah. That's the challenge, really. You have a star player who's fouled out of twice out of six games, has been missed significant time in at least two other games because of foul trouble. It looks like a pattern in the early going, needs to be addressed. And the head coach going, yeah, some of those fouls are dumb. And he's right. So I don't think Pascal Siakam's been through a lot more in his life than I think this wouldn't count as something he can't get over. Like, I don't think he's curled up in a ball and, kind of needs comforting because his coach suggests he needs to improve an element of the game. I mean, that's really what the issue is.
Do you think Siakam...
Is that where we kind of overreact to an actual honest answer?
Yeah.
Do you think Siakam deserves more leeway than he's getting, or does he think he should be getting less calls, less fouls against him now that he did what he did last year?
No, I don't think he's in that category yet, to the extent that category exists. I think one of the things that's happening here is... he has the ball about 35% of the time, or 33% of his possessions have him making a play with the ball. It's a very, very high rate. It's right up there with all the superstars. And he's playing nearly 40 minutes a game, probably 37, 30. Well, he would be if he wasn't in foul trouble. and so there's just more exposures. And so among those fouls, there are at least one or two offensive fouls every game. And that's because, A, he has the ball a lot. B, he's being required to do a lot more. C, he's trying to do a lot more. And defenses are, focusing on him. So he's playing better defenders and multiple defenders. And so, I think if you took if you limited his offensive fouls, I think overall his number would be a little bit better. But no, I don't think that it's a conspiracy or that he's not getting calls other superstars are getting. I think it's just a young player who's got a lot on his plate, and, he's sort of working to process it at high speed. And everything we've seen from Pascal Siakam is that he will very quickly sort this out.
With Michael Grange. So Ashley said last hour that some of this could just come down to trusting your teammates, that there will be help defensively. How does he adjust, Michael? What are the steps he needs to take here, hopefully starting tonight?
Yeah, a little bit of that. All the basics, really understanding the game plan, really, I think, separating offense from defense, making sure that, when you are, whatever's happening on the offensive end doesn't affect your focus defensively. I think they're calling some things a little tighter. That's generally the trend of the game, so you got to be careful with that. But otherwise, I'd say it was interesting against Milwaukee that... the standard strategy would have been OG Anunoby takes, or whoever your so-called defensive stopper is, takes 85% of the possessions against Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Pascal Siakam in that scenario doesn't have to deal with it. And, before that game, Nick Nurse was saying, no, we're not going to do that, right? Like, he is a young player who is a really good defensive player, has all the tools to be a great defensive player. And just because all of a sudden he's, going to be a primary scorer, he's not going to be relieved of that responsibility. So part of this is just challenging Siakam to grow. and figure out how to manage a massive responsibility. And you know, he was the guy who signed a contract that that says he's prepared to take on that responsibility. that's what max players are paid to do. And so I think a lot of this is just a bit of some growing pains where, you know, no one's taking the easy way out. Siakam's not, Nurse isn't. And, you know, you presume the payoff's going to be you have a player who can, you know, who can fulfill every obligation.
Imagine, Grange, someone was offered max and they're like, you know what? I just don't think I'm capable or ready to take on what this entails. I'll take less than the max, please.
Right. But I mean, hey, a lot of guys sign that contract, but they can't deal with it.
But they can't handle it. Pascal's
not one of them, but he wouldn't be. He wouldn't be the only one.
We got the Kings in town tonight. A lot of Canadian content in that group, or at least Canadian affiliations. Assistant coach Jesse Mermis coached the 905. You have Roy Rana, who's obviously just a stalwart in Canadian basketball, from Eastern Commerce to Ryerson, and then you also have Corey Joseph in that group. It's exciting, I think, for those who follow Canadian basketball specifically to see players and coaches in positions of success in the NBA. And based on talking to those three guys that I mentioned, positive in terms of giving people in Canada a look at a path to the NBA should they want to be getting involved at any level.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, you know, there really is, you know, in a very, very, very short period of time, being in the NBA has been almost like kind of a one-off type scenario for Canadians. And now you talk to Roy and you know, he's only been in the league officially for six games or something. And, you know, it's funny, he was in, he was playing the Knicks the other night, and it was RJ Barrett and Ignas Bidzikas. You know, he gets out of his hotel elevator and it's Nickeil Alexander-Walker's coming out because they're playing the Knicks that night. They played Charlotte and it was Jay Triano and Nate Mitchell who were assistant coaches with the Hornets.
Yeah.
You know, they had their heart broken by Denver and Jamal Murray the other day. And Mike Malone was the former national team assistant head coach, not Canadian, but almost. So, you know, it's a real community, and it's, you know, part of it is sparked by the Raptors, and it takes kind of time for this stuff to evolve. But, you know, it's growing, and you can almost say there's like an industry going on right now, and that's not going to go backwards. So it's kind of a neat thing.
With Michael Grange, Sportsnet's NBA insider. Michael, before we get you out of here, we would be wrong and remiss if we did not ask you to comment on the passing of Eli Pasquale. 59 years old, Canada basketball is mourning today.
Yeah, absolutely. Died of cancer in Victoria on Monday. And you know, if Pasquale is, he was Steve Nash before Steve Nash. And, you know, there's a direct lineage between Pasquale, literally Steve Nash. Steve Nash told me a story many years ago that, he was working at Eli Pasquale's basketball camps in Victoria. Pasquale was point guard 10 years on the national team, won 5 CIS championships with UVic, and had retired at this point. And he would work out with Nash all the time. And he said to Steve, he said, look, you know, when I was your age, my goal was to be an Olympian, and I made it. But I never quite made the NBA, you know, because it wasn't on my radar. It wasn't something that seemed possible to me. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but you know, if you think you can, you know, by this time Steve Nash was already scrimmaging with the national team, that was already going to happen for him. But if you think you want to be in the NBA, you got to decide right now that that's what you want to do and make that your top priority. And you know, and Nash said that was a huge thing for him, and it really helped crystallize the kind of focus he needed to have. And, you know, and from, you know, we obviously all know what Steve Nash has done and the influence he's had in the sport. And, you know, I just think that within Canadian basketball, we know we're so familiar with our history with the NHL and with hockey and with the CFL and, you know, all our other sports. And in basketball, the sport is in some ways so new, the history hasn't really been properly appreciated. And Eli Pasquale was an athlete who in today's age would be part of this NBA community we were just talking about. There's no doubt about that. and in his era was as impactful as any Canadian basketball player ever. And, the shocking thing, you know, you talk to people who knew him and watched him and were fans of him. He was the most tireless, most relentless, guttiest athlete, competitor any of them could ever recall. He was like always the first guy you think of. And, you know, the stuff he would do in fitness tests and things like that was legendary. Literally, people still talk about it. And for him to die at this age, so young, so healthy, otherwise, and leave a beautiful family behind, it's a real tragedy. And that's the sadness across the basketball community. People who knew and understood his legacy is real, and for good reason.
Very well put. We'll leave it there, Michael. Thank you, and we'll be watching tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Hi, Grange.
Michael Grange. Raps and Kings from Scotiabank Arena, 7:30 tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, a game you can watch on Sportsnet 1. Doug Christie, former Rap, former King at 8:30. Brian Burke at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And we want to put you into the draw to win a pair of Leafs tickets to see Saturday night's game against the Flyers down at Scotiabank Arena. We will play Clean Sweep. Get to calling 416-870-0590. We play it next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Leadoff presents Clean Sweep.
Clean Sweep today for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hyundai James Naismith Classic College Basketball Showcase presented by Citi on November 16th. And if you win today, you are into the draw, which we will make on Friday morning at approximately 8 o'clock for a pair of Leafs tickets to see the Flyers on Saturday night. Here's the deal. Four questions. The caller who answers the fourth and final question correctly will win. As long as you continue to answer the questions correctly, you will remain on the line. Mark in Mississauga is our leadoff hitter. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, morning.
What's up, Mark?
Morning.
Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. We're the Funky Bunch in this instance, my friend. Here is your first question on Clean Sweep. Good luck, sir.
Okay.
Which Toronto Maple Leaf is tied for second in rookie points this season with 11?
No, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
We got to make that buzzer quicker. No offense. That was tough to listen.
We're staying in Mississauga. Good morning, Frank.
Frank.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, Frank the Tank. All right, question number one. Which Toronto Maple Leaf is tied for second in rookie points this season with 11?
Malakoff.
No. Mispronounced. That's a hint. Vladimir Malakoff has retired a while ago. Let's go to Riz in Milton.
Hi, Riz.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'll be doing even better if you can get this one right. Which Toronto Maple Leaf is tied for second in rookie points this season?
Not a clue.
All right. Okay. So I'm just going to do something here. I'm going to have soup for lunch. That's my hint. Dominic in Brampton.
Dominic?
Mikhaev.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Number two, which team has the best record in the NBA at 6-1?
Oh, my goodness. The Lakers?
Yes.
The Los Angeles Lakers, the Showtime Lakers, baby. Here's question number three. Let's keep it rolling. Dr. Sleep, never heard of it, releases on Friday. Which actor played Jack Torrance in the 1980 film The Shining?
Jack Nicholson?
Yes.
Wow. All right. For the win, who is the current NHL point leader this season?
Oh, my goodness. Connor McDavid?
No.
Fair guess.
All right. Most of the work has been done for you, Sean, in Brampton. Good morning.
How you doing?
Hey, Sean. All right. Who is the current NHL point leader this season?
The best player in the league, Pasternak.
Whoa.
Listen, he got us out of that jam. Yes. Whatever you say, yes, I agree with. Yes.
Did we just give tickets away to a Bruins fan?
Oh, my gosh. There are a lot of Bruins fans in Toronto, though.
There are. We have to be nice to everybody. Congratulations to Sean and Brampton. You win a pair of tickets to see the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by City on November 16th. And even though you clearly hate the Leafs because you love Pasternak and the Bruins, you are into the weekly draw, which we will make on Friday morning to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. He's a former Raptor, a former Sacramento King. So the timing's right with the Kings in town tonight. Doug Christie at 8:30 and Brian Burke. What does he make of Ziggy's prediction that the Leafs are going to have to move a contract here of some significance when Zach Hyman returns? We'll discuss it next.
Get an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack.
I am sensing a general lack of vision. One of you is the least attractive person I've ever seen. I'm not going to say who.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And former Sacramento King Doug Christie a little later on in the hour. The Leafs beat the Kings 3-1 down at Scotiabank Arena last night. Close game. They got it done in the end with a couple of goals 30 seconds apart in the back half of the third period. To recap that and to discuss what is next for this team as Zach Hyman's return is imminent and could have salary cap implications, just given how the Leafs are up against it. Brian Burke is our Sportsnet hockey analyst and our NHL insiders for McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. Brian is with us each and every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Berkey, thanks so much, as always, for this. Mike Babcock called last night's game beautiful, even if the rest of us didn't think it. Every win is beautiful, isn't it?
Well, I thought that was a coach putting a really good coat of paint on a crappy. I mean, it was. They're not all going to be Rembrandts, but they shouldn't be stick figure drawings either. So, I know exactly what he's saying, but I was at the game and it was not a pretty game. I don't think I saw either team complete two passes in a row, except on the power play. The general lack of hitting and execution and. But they won, and what Mike's saying is absolutely correct. It ain't how, it's how many, and they won. And they could have easily lost that game, and they didn't. When Jonathan Quick made the big save on Matthews, I thought, we're going overtime. And then they scored two quick goals. So, you know, 20 years from now, people look at the box score and say they won the game. That's all that matters. They won't talk about how it looked.
Would you be concerned watching that one as a GM, or when you just want to get the wins whenever you can get them?
Well, I think this team is, you know, like you got John Tavares coming back from an injury, missed an open net. He's going to be rusty, missed seven games. I thought for a guy with rust on him, he looked fine. They did some things well, but they stuck with it. I thought L.A. tried to play a Western Conference game, tried to bang and tried to clog up the middle and tried to clog on the boards and just make every piece of ice difficult to attain. And so Toronto went to a lot of flip passes out of their own end on the breakout, and they stuck with it and they found a way to win. And you should never, ever look down on a win. You should never. You can make fun of it for being ugly, but it's still 2 points against a team that was very determined and played a very difficult game for Toronto. Shots were even, so no, it was good. It was a good win.
With Brian Burke, Sportsnet's hockey insider. This is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Jeff Carter hit on Kerfoot, Berkey, I thought it was 100% clean. It's one of those open ice hits that you don't see much in the game anymore. Do you agree that it was 100% clean? And if so, is there any responsibility a teammate of Kerfoot's has to step in and step up on his behalf? Or because it was clean, is it okay to just let it ride? These things happen sometimes.
Well, first off, there's no dispute about it being a clean hit. Anyone who says it was late or cheap is an idiot. And it's a clean hit. And yes, they skate away from that. I had no problem with no response on that one. I hate clean hit fights generally. Like, you're Kerfoot, keep your head up. Don't get hit like that. Like, when I played in the American League, if you got hit like that, and I did, I'd skate back to the bench, and my teammates coming by me would be like, keep your head up. Nobody went after the guy that hit me. So the big hit, the clean hit fight, you want in two cases, where it's a really good young player. So the other night, Kyle Palmieri jumped in when Jack Hughes got drilled by Matty Niskanen. That's a clean hit fight. We want that fight. If I'm New Jersey, I want Kyle Palmieri to fight him. But that's, you know, like, to me, Kerfoot's not a kid. He's a veteran. Keep your head up.
No, I definitely like that point, and I see where you're coming from. It's just now the book's out on Toronto, and it's been the book for the next couple years, right? Not necessarily in the Kerfoot situation, but there's been a number of big hits that have been laid on Toronto players, and you haven't really seen it done the other way. Toronto hasn't really tuned up anyone, so that's just the way that they're going to play, and that's the things that they have to live with at this point, right?
Yes. Now, I started to say about clean hit fights. You do want a clean hit fight on a top young player. You do want a clean hit fight on your superstar, and you do want a clean hit fight on your goaltender. And that's where I think the Toronto Maple Leafs should be concerned. John Tavares has gotten blown up a couple times. No response. He's your captain. He's your star. He needs to be protected. Mitch Marner needs to be protected. Auston Matthews is big enough. I don't think he needs to be protected. Mm-hmm. But Freddie needs to be protected. So I don't think they have the capacity to respond in those circumstances, and they have not. But again, they've elected to play that way, and that's fine. I've stopped harping about it because I think it might just be my personal bias on how they should play, and I don't think as an analyst you're entitled to have a personal bias.
So then if you think that you should fight to defend your goalie, what do you feel about Milan Lucic getting suspended for 2 games for the punch on Sherwood, I believe it was?
Yeah, I enjoyed that, watching the kid get smacked. Because that was not a little tap on a goaltender. That was a real vicious dig at a puck that was covered. So I enjoyed that. I was hoping someone would drill him. I didn't know Luch was on the ice. I wasn't paying that close attention. But my view on suspensions is I don't argue if they're within one game. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if I think it's worth 2 and they give him 3, I don't say anything. If I think it's worth 1 and he gets, or I think it's worth 4 and he gets 3, I don't say anything because I did that job. Mm-hmm. And my son works for player safety, but I did that job, and I used to marvel at the media who would say, "Well, I can't believe he only gave him 3; it should have been 4." They weren't even in the hearing. So I thought it was a little stiff. I thought he was going to get 1 game, but again, if it's within 1 game, I leave it alone.
Berkey, can you take us back to when you did that job and take us through the process of determining appropriate length of suspension? Video review. Speaking to the perpetrator, speaking to other, like, what does an hour, a couple of hours, a day look like as you're making a determination on a particular play?
Well, people are amazed. The hearings seldom last more than 10, 12 minutes. I mean, basically, they do it the same way today that I did it. And when I started back in 93, I called the NHLPA and I said, look, we've got a chance to redo this. Brian O'Neill, Mr. O'Neill did discipline before I did. And I said, tell me what the players hate about the current system. And the number one thing they hated was having to fly to New York for a hearing and then getting 1 or 2 games. So he said, okay, they can do it by phone. Mm-hmm. If it's 4 games or less, you can do it by phone. If I'm contemplating 4 games or less, if I think it's 5 or more, you got to fly to New York or wherever I was at the time. And then you go in the hearing and you say, tell the player, here's the rules. There's no rules of evidence. You can say whatever you want. You can bring in any evidence you want. Player usually goes through the incident with me or now with George Parrish, so he explains. You watch the tape. The player gives his version of it. They ask the team. The team usually chimes in for 35 or 45 seconds. Then they ask the union if they got anything to say, but they're representing both players, so they're in a tough spot. They usually just talk about whether the player in front of you has a record. The agent's there sometimes, and he might say, well, he's a great kid. You know, it's pretty predictable. And then you say, okay, see ya. Sometimes the hearings only last 6, 7, 8 minutes. And then you make your determination. Now, there is a library on this, right? Going back to when I started, there was no library when I got there. But going back to 1993, they've got every incident that was reviewed on video. So now they're kind of, they're not cookie cutter because none of them are ever the same. But they kind of say, okay, this incident, you're probably getting 3 games if you do this. You're probably getting 4 games if you do this. So the player knows going in. The team's already told him. The union's already told him. His agent's already told him. You're getting 3 for sure. We're going to see if we can get it, avoid getting to 4.
And how did you take past infractions into account? Like if a guy had a rap sheet of a suspension or two in his background, did that add a game? Did it add 2? Like how
it
did
depends
that
on, it depends on how serious it is. But the repeat offender part of it is the players themselves were adamant about that back when we put this in. The guys that keep coming in here have to get more. The players wanted that more than anyone, that we're not going to get injured by some idiot that gets suspended twice a year. Start giving those guys double digits and it'll stop. So the players pushed hardest for that, and they're right. The biggest threat to a player now with an illegal hit shouldn't be a guy who's gotten away with it 7 times.
With Brian Burke, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now, with Hyman returning, the Leafs are going to be even a bigger cap crunch. It's looking like they're only going to be able to carry 20 players on the roster. Is this something you would do, or would you move a bigger contract to make space to hold 23 players?
Well, their farm team's right in town, so carrying 20 players isn't some hardship like it would be for a lot of teams. You know, if you're the St. Louis Blues, your farm team's in Texas. If you're the Calgary Flames, your farm team's in Stockton, California. So this is not a hardship for them. They put a guy, I used to laugh, a call-up for me, when I was in Anaheim, our team was in Portland, Maine. So a call-up for us was after the game, we get somebody hurt Santa Wednesday night. We call Portland. They wake the kid up. The trainer wakes up, goes to the rink, gets him his gear. We put him in a driver takes him down to Boston. He stays at the Hilton at Logan Airport. Next day, he catches his first flight. He still can't get there for the game day skate at 11:30. By the time he lands, it's about 11. And he's in LAX, and he's got an hour drive, so no skate. And then the call-up, when I ran the Leafs, the call-up was a $14 cab ride from Rico.
Yeah.
So it's not a hardship. They can carry 20 better than anyone. Them in San Jose, they have their farm teams right in their whole city, right in their home city, so it's not a hardship. They can do it. They're going to do it. I will predict they're going to do it several times this year.
So you would stay with the 20 players. The only reason I have an issue with this, and we were talking about this earlier on the show, is that as a player, you want to stay with the big club. It's just being around the team. The practices are different. Like, you can say what you want about the AHL, but nothing will be the same as being with the NHL club.
Hell, players don't have a vote.
No, they don't.
So I don't care if a player is upset because he gets set down. Because they carry 20 guys, they've invested their cap money. It's a team's decision. I don't care if player 21 is sour because he has to go down. Who cares?
No, it's true. And you would sometimes, if they're a bit salty about it, and then they go and they kind of fix up their attitude down with the AHL club, maybe give them a bit more kudos for that, for understanding that it's part of the business and using it as motivation to get back up instead of sulking, which is what we hear sometimes about certain players.
Well, a guy's sulking. He's not coming back. I can tell you that. You guys act like this is something the players have a vote on.
Yeah.
They're gonna say go to 20. They're going to tell a couple guys they got to go down. If they sulk, then they're going to call up guys that handle the stuff properly. These guys all knew what they were doing when they signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
With Brian Burke on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Spinning around the league just a little bit, Burkey. We were saying earlier on in the program, if your favorite team, you go to the standings page on NHL.com, and under last 10, you see 10-0-0, W10 for 10 consecutive victories. I mean, you're walking around with your chest puffed out and your shoulders back just a little bit. What do you make of this New York Islanders team? They're on a heater. They haven't lost in almost 4 weeks. Are they for real in your mind?
Yeah, they're not going to play at this pace. Obviously, no one can sustain that kind of success. But they're, I think they're for real. You know, last year Barry Trotz came in and he cut their goals against by 100 goals against. That's impossible. And they had a really good year, and then they lost Leonard, and everyone said, well, it'd be the same. They got the goalie. I really like their team. I think they got some balance in scoring. They've got some stars. I think you need stars to win, and Barzal's a star. Lou Lamoriello re-signed all of those guys who are UFAs, Everly and Lee and Nelson. He re-signed them all. And so, to me, yeah, they're for real. I think they can continue to play at that level and not at that level, but I think they're for real in terms of being a real playing at a long sustained stretch at a winning clip. Now, the one thing there, they're like everyone, say starting goalie has to stay healthy, but yeah, I think they're for real.
Is this outrage by Drew Doughty towards the media for real? He of course made a comment after a loss to Vancouver saying our team can't lose like this to a team like this. And he got pissed because he felt that his comments were misrepresented. And I think that he said what he said after a bad loss and he was upset. And he's well within his rights to walk it back. But you're someone who's been on both sides, the team side and the media side. I think an aspect of this, too, is the team saying, okay, we got to get this under control a little bit. Because the quotes are there, the transcript is there. So reiterating or clarifying what you meant is one thing, but to say that you kind of didn't say that or you were misrepresented, it's another. I'm just wondering where you fall on this whole thing that's turned into a firestorm, really.
Well, I don't know how big a firestorm it is. I will tell you this. I thought the same thing. When they got spanked, I thought, well, they can't lose to a team like that because none of us took Vancouver as seriously as we should have.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was accurate, except that he was dead wrong on the quality of the team. So was I. Like, you show me anyone that picked Vancouver to be the best team in their division. Anyone. Answer, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So what he said was true at the time, given what we're all thinking. And what I would have just said is, if I were Drew, because I think Drew's a good kid, what I would say is, look, I was talking about preseason expectations, early start to the year. I stand by the comments based on what Vancouver was at that time. But obviously they've turned into a much better team, and kudos to them. Move on. What he said wasn't outrageous at the time. Nobody took him up on it at the time, except Vancouver fans, because we were all like, yeah, Vancouver's just an okay team, and they just killed us. We can't lose like that to a team like that.
Yep.
I get it. What he said was accurate at the time. Now, the Canucks are stuffing it down lots of people's throats because they've been out of their minds the way they're playing. They're as big a surprise as the Islanders are. So, to me, I think instead of saying I didn't say it, or got twisted, say, yeah, I said it. And kudos to Vancouver because they're proving lots of people, including me, wrong.
Great stuff as always, Berkey. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Brian. Berkey.
Brian Burke. I'm just looking at Vancouver's stats here.
Yeah, buddy.
15 games played, 36 goals against. It's the plus 18 goal differential is a nice look, but 36 goals against in 15 games.
You look at the Pacific and you see the Oilers and the Canucks at the top of that table. You're like, huh.
And Arizona third.
Well, Travis Green in Vancouver has done a great job. He's a guy that started with the Utica Comets in the organization. They developed him. He had a couple rough years there. He did a great job developing the program, developing the players. A lot of them know him, and he knows what these guys can do. And that's great when you can develop players in the minor league system, and then you go up and coach the big club. This is now starting to look like it's paying off for the organization.
Well, I'm just going to dumb it right down and say that anybody, unless he's coaching Montreal or Boston, anybody who played on those early 2000s Leafs teams who's gone on to have success behind a bench in a league, I'm rooting for.
Well,
I love me some Travis Green, Shane Corson, Darcy Tucker. Let's jump into a bench and brawl. I like it.
And that was a great time. Do I have a minute or no?
Well, you asked nicely, so.
Okay, so the.
Keep it short, will you?
Say
that again, Gibby. Just a second. Yeah.
Keep it short.
Okay, go ahead.
When me and Berkey, when I was with the Leafs in 2010, I did get sent down, and it was one of those things where they did carry 23 at the time, but it is difficult when you're away from the team. And I understand what Brian is saying that, yeah, I don't care what the players think. It's my team. This isn't a democracy, and I get that. But I know from talking to players, and it's not that hard to see that you want to be with the big club because those practices and being around the team, it does matter. But having the luxury in your same city, having your AAA team, is great as well. And I understand what Brian's saying, the Marlies versus maybe saying having our team in St. John's, Newfoundland. But yeah, we did have that relationship with them in 2010.
Even that would be closer, though, St. John's, Newfoundland, than Portland, Maine to Anaheim, ooh, which I did a quick little search. It's over 3,000 kilometers, or maybe miles. I don't remember. I closed the window. A 46-hour drive.
We got a game.
They weren't driving, but...
No, I know that, but just for context, people might not... A flight is a flight. You kind of say it flippantly. It can be however long, but a 46-hour drive is how long it would take to get.
And my friends played on that in that organization when the Kings were in Portland at the time, and it's... Yeah, sometimes you'd have to call a guy up 2 days before.
Oh, my God, we get it. You have famous friends. Oh, gosh. Jesus.
They ever coming on the show, any of your famous friends?
Yeah, who do you want?
Yeah, stop bogarting your friends.
You want to go through the Rolodex?
Let's
here?
Go through the Rolodex. And whoever picks up, yeah, whoever picks this, up, hey, just come on the show.
At this point, I don't think many people are picking up my phone calls.
You could, because you're on the radio or for other reasons, you could win one of 50 $500 prize packs and qualify for a grand prize sports weekend getaway, including tickets to see both Toronto teams back-to-back with the VTech wake-up call. The phone line is available 24/7. Give us a call at 416-413-4141. Leave us your best Toronto sports take. Set your alarms every Friday morning at 8:20, and that's when we will play our selection of the week, the VTech wake-up call. Ziggy says the Leafs are going to have to make a bold move, remove a contract of some consequence when Zach Hyman returns from injury, which will be soon. That could be one of your hot takes. How do you feel about that? Visit sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. He's a former Rap. He's a former Sacramento King. And the Kings are in town tonight. Good time to catch up with Doug Christie. He's coming up.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Raps and Kings tonight, Scotiabank Arena, 7:30 tip. A game you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and a game you can watch on Sportsnet 1. Doug Christie. This is where you start to realize your age. A Toronto Raptor from 1995 to 2000. We're going on the better part of two decades now. Former Sacramento King, and now a member of the Sacramento Kings broadcast team. He's good enough to take some time to join us this morning. Doug, thank you so much. And look, you got to understand, whenever a former Raptor comes on the program these days, the milk toast leadoff question that I love to ask is, where were you when the Raptors clinched? And could you have ever envisioned when you were playing in this city, the better part of 20 years ago now, that what happened in June could occur?
Man, good to talk to you guys, first of all. But, yeah, actually, I could, because I can remember us practicing at Brennan College and us bringing it in. And I said to everyone, I said, you know, for us to be a world champion, we have to think like it. We'd bring it in. I'd say, 1, 2, 3, world champ. And guys were like, what the hell? But, yeah, this is a passionate fan base. And not a more deserving fan base. Listen, it's a testament that it can happen to anybody. It's through hard work. It's through everything that the front office did, the coaching staff, all the years prior to that, building up to teach teams that we can compete and you can be it can be possible. And for them to do it was about as amazing as I've seen them.
Do you find yourself fanboying through the NBA Finals? Like, are you living and dying with each possession? Were you watching the games?
Oh, I watch basketball all day, every day, man. It's an absolute passion that I have. I love teaching it. I love being around it. It's just it's what I enjoy.
So on the other side, though, of that NBA Finals, you have the Golden State Warriors, who their dynasty seems to have come crashing down around them a little bit, and largely because of a trio of injuries. And injuries are not something that you can control. Everyone knows this when it comes to sports. So you have Klay Thompson, he gets injured. Kevin Durant, he gets injured after sitting out for the majority of the postseason. And then now you have Steph, who broke his hand. But Durant goes on record and he says, hey, if I didn't get hurt, we win that. The Raptors don't. Steph has a T-shirt kind of mocking the box and won. A little bit of saltiness coming from these guys. You were in a really tough situation 2002 with the Kings. You guys didn't close out a game 6, and there was some controversy surrounding that game. But then in game 7, the Lakers got the better of you guys. How long does it take to get over something like that? Or do you not get over something like that?
No, you never get over anything like that. Actually, in game 7, we missed too many free throws. But the series was probably lost in game 1 when we just, played all year to get home court advantage and weren't prepared and come out and lose game 1. And then we beat them pretty much from then on, except for the ability to close it out. Those are things, unless at some point you win a championship, but even then the fabric of a team every year is different. Even if you bring similar players back, there's the odd, eighth guy, 11th guy at the end of the bench, maybe a coach leaves. So it's never exactly the same. So that particular instance, it is something that stays with you for a lifetime.
Do you think that's something that's underrated for young players? And maybe even veteran players, because I think sometimes we separate the two groups of guys too much. But players in general in the NBA and also other sports, how hard is it to get through to them that just because you're in a really positive scenario with your team one year, you may never capture that essence again, no matter where you go, and that you should relish it in those moments?
Actually, I would say it's players in general. It's where you relish it more as you get a little older. But I can remember that team that we had in Sacramento, and when before the season started, they give one of the players a microphone and he goes out and talks. Well, they gave it to me, and I went out, and I didn't have anything planned to say, but what I said was, to the fans, I hope that you guys truly appreciate this, because you never know how quickly it ends. And before, within 24 months from that, we started to disintegrate that team. So it is something that happens. It happens quickly. You got guys who come into the NBA and they are rookies, and they go to, you're on LeBron James' team, and for the first 6 years, you go to six straight finals. And then for the rest of your career, you never might make it back. So it's nothing that's set in stone, even no matter how good your team is. As we saw with Golden State, injuries can take a toll on you.
Doug Christie is our guest, a former Toronto Raptor, former Sacramento King. The Raps and Kings play tonight at Scotiabank Arena at 7:30, a game you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You're listening to Leadoff.
Doug, I wanted to ask you, how's the transition into broadcasting now? Is it what you thought it would be?
I didn't really, to be honest with you, have any expectations, because this isn't something that I necessarily planned on doing. It kind of, the Kings called me up. I was going to do a camp for Golden One, did a camp. They, some really nice people in the front office, Alma Godinez and Darren Goss, just sat me down and we started talking just about what we're talking about, just basketball in general, old times. Obviously, they liked what they heard. They called me back and was like, do you want to do radio? Radio goes into the television. Television goes into a couple games doing this. And then last year was my first whole year. So, the hardest thing, and I hadn't experienced it until the other night, was being critical of our guys. And that's because I have really high expectations of these guys. But, being the color guy is different, because I'm not a coach, but I'm not a player, so I can't do anything about it. But my frustration kind of got the better of me for the first time ever. So, you know, the critical part is it's difficult because you have to be honest, but at the same time, I'm fully vested in these guys and the coaching staff. I've got real love for them. I want to see them succeed and those type of things. So, you know, there's difficult parts of it, but for the most part, I enjoy it, you know, because I enjoy basketball. I enjoy talking about basketball and being around basketball.
Do you find, though, as an ex-player, that maybe a guy will come up to you and feel more comfortable being like, Doug, man, you pulled me up on this. Why'd you have to do me like that? And you're just like, listen, as someone who's been there, this is what I saw. And you can have more of an open dialogue as opposed to a player feeling more attacked by, quote unquote, a traditional media member.
You know, no one has said that to me, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, but I'm totally open to that conversation. But I'm really not that critical. I'm honest. I'm never calling anybody on, like, unless it's effort-based, you're probably not going to have a problem with me, you okay. know. But if it's effort, you know, because, like, if it's effort, like, get a job, a real one, and then see what's happening. You know what I'm saying? Because this is sports. This is, like, it, you know, it is probably one of the hardest jobs in the world. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, we play sports. I talk about sports in a game for a living. But other than that, our guys are awesome. And I think they know I got mad love for them. So, but if they ever wanted to talk to me, I'm totally open to it because nothing ever is coming from a bad place or a negative place with me.
It's good to know you're not walking around being like, I'm Doug Christie. Pull up on me.
I don't work like that.
No. Okay, just quickly before we get you out of here, I'd love to know when you watch Pascal Siakam with a critical eye, what is it that you see in his game that you like? Is there any pitfall that you would like to see him improve upon?
You know, the one thing that I love about Pascal as I watch him is the fact that he evolved. And I think that is important for basketball because you watch a guy who's coming and he goes to the G League, he wins a G League championship, then he comes to the NBA, he slowly gets minutes, he evolves, and all of a sudden now he is a, you know, a max player on a team that now they are dependent on him in huge ways and he's scoring. I would say that the biggest thing is the confidence in the shot, meaning that his confidence continues to evolve, the same thing. And really that's all it is hard work. But if you know Pascal and you know the way he goes about his business, then you know that he is going to put the work in that is going to make that go to the next level. The fact that he plays both ends of the floor for me is speaks volumes. Everything else kind of falls into place. Basketball is a game that's played on both ends, and if you do that, I think you respect the game. So not a lot for him. I think that when you talk about Pascal Siakam, what you ultimately are talking about is the ability for a guy to work hard and evolve, and I think we're watching that before our very eyes.
Doug, welcome back to the city. It's always good to have you back in town, and I hope we can catch up again soon.
Anytime, you guys. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
Doug Christie, former Raptor, former Sacramento Kings, 7:30 tonight, The Tip. Raps and Kings from Scotiabank Arena, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, a game you can watch on Sportsnet 1. We want to send you to see the Leafs play in Florida in January. We'll tell you how to enter that contest. Ashley would like to pilot that flight, if at all possible.
Oh my gosh, that'd be so much fun. Yeah. Co-pilot.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone wants me in the air by myself, leading the way after a few VODSODs.
You just want to be on the plane. You don't really care if you're flying it, but you're not eligible to win. Unfortunately, we'll get you details on that contest, and there's some pizza kicking around. Talk about it next.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Say, how would you? And by you, I mean you. Like to fly on board the Air Canada fan flight to see the Maple Leafs play in Florida in January. Well, stay tuned during Good Show with Ben Ennis and JD Bunkus, or go to sportsnet.ca/590 for details. So it's 8:52 a.m. Eastern Time, and we are teenagers. Pizza, for breakfast. I guess the only part of the teenage experience that is not accurate is we'd be still in bed and wake up probably 2-3 hours from now to have pizza for breakfast.
And said pizza would be cold.
Unless you microwave it.
Who microwaves pizza?
It's been done.
Oh, Lord. Although I do know the trick for that. If anyone is into old pizza reheated, you put it in the microwave with a glass or a bowl of water. So it, like, basically rehydrates it so you don't get, like, the...
Isn't it soggy then?
No, not in the water, bro. The water is in the microwave with the pizza. You're not dipping it. It's not a hot dog eating contest on the floor.
Joey Chestnut is not microwaving pizza in a glass of water.
Is pizza not better when you... Do you guys have time to put it in the oven for when you're reheating it?
No.
Because when I'm reheating pizza the next day, I feel like it's better than when it comes fresh from the delivery guy. I like it the next morning in the oven, and it's a little bit crispy.
Yeah, the only thing is you got to wait 10 minutes for the oven to heat
and
up.
And who cares when you're hungover? Because that's what's that's what we're talking about here, if we're being honest.
You're looking for...
Standards are low. It's like, did I survive? Yes. Can I get a glass of water? Yes. Is pizza on hand? Perfect. Am I going to wake up after my morning nap with a pepperoni on my shoulder? Potentially. Am I fine with that? Absolutely.
Have I had 2 Advils? They helped.
Food in the bed? You guys eat? You guys bring food in the bed?
1,000%. Don't be judgy.
That is like no. I will never bring food into the bed at all.
Not even snacks?
Never. Maybe ice cream.
Okay.
That is it. I do not bring any food in. Nope.
There's a line of questioning that we could go down, but unfortunately, our time here is almost up. We would be remiss if we did not mention that Pizza Pizza is introducing Gourmet Thins. That's how the pizza conversation came up. We are getting bombarded with pizza this morning in studio. It is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Pizza Pizza's Gourmet Thins. There's creamy truffle, steak and blue cheese, sriracha and honey, chicken bruschetta. I could mispronounce
chicken
all these
what,
words.
Sorry?
Bruschetta. Is it bruschetta or is bruschetta? I don't know. I can't go to Italian restaurants without getting a complex.
Oh, that was so bad.
Okay.
We have an Italian back there and they're just losing their mind.
Okay. Well, Mon, keep that one and hold it against me. Pesto amore. Are you jumping in or not? I keep looking at you.
I was looking behind the glass. I was looking at Mon. I wanted to see what he had to say about that comment.
Thank God. Good show is next because this has been a bad ending for me. Mark Shapiro, Paul Coffey, tomorrow morning. Talk to you at 6 a.m. Eastern Time Thursday.